Back from the past, season 3, episode 9.
EP 9.
It's your boys, Uncle E.
We back
in the flesh.
We and back.
Your boy Anzo back with another classic.
Yes, sir.
Who says it? Is that Nas? It's is a it classic. Nas? I think it's
probably Nas.
I think it's
we'll
Nas,
give Nas bro. The credit for that one.
You know what I mean? What's going on, people? Welcome back to another episode.
Yes, sir.
We're back in a hidden, undisclosed location.
Come on.
Recording this fuego for you guys. And yeah, it's been it hasn't been that long since the last one. You know what
no,
I'm saying?
No. Yeah, it's been like, 3 weeks to 4 weeks.
Definitely been more diligent about it. But yeah, happy to be back for another episode.
Yeah, we're closing out the season here. After this, one more to go. So
it's about that time for spiritual cleansing.
Spiritual cleansing time, you know?
Yeah. How's everything, bro? How you been?
Yeah, we've been good, you know. Made a few trips. Again, went to see my brother, surprised my brother for his 40th birthday.
Shout out to the one and only Malik.
Yeah, shout out to Malik.
Happy 40th.
I have, you know, September 22nd for me and my family. We have it's a day of birthday. So my older brother Malik, it's his birthday. My niece too, baby Aisha, it's her birthday. And cousin Tima as well. So it's
mad, bro.
Yeah, so a happy birthday again to you know, bro, niece and Tima.
Happy birthday to the fam.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And then DXB and then what?
DXB, then you know, went to Charlotte, then Atlanta for a cousin wedding. So you know, family trips, you know. I'm the type where I go on like that's like vacations for me. It's like I don't know if people are like that. Like, if I go say I'm going on vacation, for me, that's going to visit family. I don't know.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Like for you? Mostly to see family,
right? Yeah.
But sometimes it's cool to like just get your group of friends and go somewhere.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How you been, though? What's going on? What's going on the Anzo experience?
What hasn't been going on, man? I feel like I don't sleep. But nah, you know, we just been staying low, working.
Yeah, yeah.
Went to Lawson Rhythm.
How was that?
Lawson Rhythm was an experience.
Give me two highlights and two lowlights of the Lawson Rhythm, and maybe if people who don't know what Lawson Rhythm was.
Lawson Rhythm, if you don't know, was is a Afrobeats festival that happened in Sacramento.
Okay.
Was it 2 weeks ago, right?
Yes, about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, because I was in Portland last week. But basically, it was just an Afrobeats festival. A bunch of different African artists came through. Really mostly Nigerian, you know.
Afrobeats artists?
Yeah.
So
a couple Ghanaians.
Okay.
It was a pretty massive concert. Highlights, Wizkid shut it down.
Really?
Yeah, man. He was fire. Burna, Tiwa. Rotimi was really good.
Oh, okay.
Tems, Amare. Like, there was not one bad performance except Goldlink.
Oh, okay.
I think somebody said something to him that pissed him off, so he like...
Oh, he was not feeling it, huh?
Bro, the energy was weak, man. I don't know. I really want to know what happened.
Well...
But... I don't want to dig into that situation, but
yeah,
overall performances were great.
Good performances.
Sound was a little, you know, on the first day it was a little off, and then overall the logistics of the
was it planned the, well.
The second day was
okay.
The first day definitely had like growing pains.
Okay.
There was like a stampede that happened at one point.
Oh, man.
The VIP stage setup was a little off. There weren't enough vendors for food and drinks. So, you know, you were standing in line for a really long time. But I commend their team because the second day was a lot better.
Okay. So they stepped it up.
Stepped it up really well. And people definitely had a more pleasurable viewing experience then. So shout out to the Lawson Rhythm team for that.
Nice, nice. But, yeah, that's good to hear. After, you know, the Afro Nation thing with, you know, people trying to get their refunds.
Right.
Now another one, it could quickly start building a reputation of these organizers of African Afrobeat festivals.
Exactly.
Are, you know, come with all this pain. So it's good that they, you know, eventually they got it right on the second day.
And I remember, I think we talked about it one time when Jadena was talking about,
you know,
when he was in London, didn't get to perform.
And, yep.
And he's talking about those operational things that mm-hmm. need to happen mm-hmm. in order for us to, you know, get ahead of the rest
yeah.
and grow the brand of Afrobeats to the world. And he was spot on, because the second day, great, you know, first day needed work, but whoever put it together realized that, and they realized the urgency, because it's not like back home where you said you were going to be on stage at 11.
You show up at like 4 a.m.
You know, stuff like that. So they definitely understand like the business of that in America, and that was really good.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's so, good then.
You know, Lost in Rhythm, then, you know, been DJing small here and there.
Small. Look at him. Man's out here shutting down. And, you know, like Skepta. You know, shut down.
Shut down thing. But yeah, bro, that's really been it.
Nice. What's up?
But today we wanted to talk about, coincidentally, business in Africa. Yes.
Okay. You know, this is the finance guy here, so.
No, please. Know. No, please. But it just relates to something like Lost in Rhythm. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Business on the continent, rather, though, because it's not Lost in Rhythm was here, but some of the fastest growing, you know, markets and
in Africa,
yeah, and overall just economic sectors. What do you think is some of
them? Well, I mean, just to start off with, I feel like that's something that we probably all need to educate ourselves more on and be aware of. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all focused on the markets in the US stock mm-hmm. market, you know, here, and you know, maybe because we live here and stuff, but a lot of time we fail to realize Africa as in the growth potential that mm-hmm. is out there, and
mm-hmm.
What industries are trending and what markets are booming. So you know, it's exciting, and I feel like this is something we should talk about more.
100%. I think the opportunities are endless. It's definitely, it's a drawing board for many things, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
That's not to say everything's, you know, peaches and cream. There's
no, of course.
It's definitely a lot that needs to be improved upon, but there's tremendous opportunities there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what do you think? Give me one.
So, I mean, about. I know we, you know, did a couple just to see, all right, where was, you know, Africa in terms of right now industries, you know, what were maybe like top industry you would mm-hmm. say if you were looking into investing in Africa, or you kind of have those plans and, you know, kind of like as I shared to you, you know, just looking at, you know, just Googling quick research. We were able to see that, you know, about the top five industries in Africa. I think we saw one was industrialization,
mm-hmm.
two, agriculture, three, infrastructure, four, digital and mobile access,
mm-hmm.
and five, which is urbanization.
Okay.
So these, and we'll put the sources too if anyone is interested in reading more about them, were deemed the top five fastest growing industries in Africa. For me, mm-hmm. now going back to your question,
mm-hmm.
I feel like industrialization and agriculture is just the engineering me where I lean more towards mm-hmm. in terms of knowing there's that opportunity. And for agriculture, let's start with industrialization. Africa, we are known for producing raw materials, right? And if I'm using Gambia as an example, you know, let's say Gambia, you know, exports cashew nuts.
Okay.
But largely, you will not find an industrialized process of mass processing of cashew nuts, right? Mm-hmm. Largely, you know, you harvest it and they sell it raw.
Mm-hmm.
And then that goes, you know, to another country, you know, and they do the processing. And guess what? By the time they sell it, that supply chain, they're selling it at 3 times, 4 times, 5 market times the original.
A bunch, yeah.
So I always notice that if you tie industrialization in terms of introducing advanced manufacturing methods
and automation,
you know, and, you know, high-end machinery
mm-hmm.
into creating processing facilities, and just, you know, using also data science in agriculture that US is doing here,
yeah,
that there's huge opportunity in Africa because the, you know, the crops are there, the, you know, there's so much that we export that other people from other continents take it, process it, and are making a killing. So those two out of the top five
mm-hmm.
Were ones that kind of stood out for me.
Stood out for you?
Yeah. How about you?
Well, I think for me, because of the, I guess my background as well, mm-hmm. and my family's background, agriculture, number one.
Okay.
I was having a chat with my uncle when I was back home in 2020. And he said something simple. He was like, in 2080, right, the population of Africa is supposed to surpass 1 billion, I think. Are we already there?
I mean, it's towards that trend. Africa
has to be the... It has to be one of the fastest... So we're at 1.26 billion.
1.26.
Yeah. Okay, so I forget the projection he was telling me, right? But in 2080, he was giving me like a projection, right? And he was like, how are you going to feed all those people? Because that's something standard you need to...
We can't feed them with currently using cutlass and, you know... And
exactly
using methods that were 200 years ago.
So you take a small example like a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. How does a restaurant, or not even a restaurant, let's say a farmer, right? How does he scale his product in order to meet his supplier's demands, right? So the suppliers that take his product and sell it, so they're the middleman, sell it to the customer, right? And two, how does he ensure that he's making his process the most efficient, right? So what is he growing? Is he growing a crop that's going to take, you know, a year to harvest? Yep. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And how effective is he being with his land, right? So I started thinking about that and I was like, you know, people need to eat. If you look at America, some of the top 1% richest billionaires mm-hmm. in the country are the biggest landowners as well.
Yes, of course.
And you'll go to places like the Midwest, you know, Ohio, Iowa, all these farming places, right?
Yep.
Farming states. And what do you find?
It's just cornfields.
You see what I'm saying?
You know, so big farmlands.
So it's like we're a land that's, the continent of Africa is a land that's abundant in.
Come on.
You know,
completely right. And yeah, so what sticks out to me most was you mentioned there and identifying one, what the potential problem or demand will be mm-hmm. is if industrialization and agriculture are the top two fastest growing in industries in Africa.
Exactly.
That means that whatever process you introduce, whatever way of, you know, harvesting crops, for example, mm-hmm. it has to scale.
It has to scale.
So there's this industrialization and agriculture needs to scale.
Absolutely.
In Africa in terms Absolutely. Of output, the Absolutely, amount of output yeah. you can have.
We were watching a documentary on an Ethiopian flower farmer, and she's managed to implement like a sort of automation that knows exactly how much her roses need, how much water her roses need, you mm-hmm. know. She's implemented things like greenhouses and yes. minimized labor as much as
you minimize possible. Labor and maximize automation. And
and her results are tremendous.
Yeah, because you can scale. You can scale to meet demands. You know,
absolutely.
So those two, and another important one I think too is, of course, mobile. The power of the mobile
phone. Like accessibility?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, we already know, I know Kenya, which one has the M-Pesa?
M-Pesa, yeah. M-Pesa.
You know, telecommunications and, you know, Africa probably is a continent that uses mobile phones more than anyone. It feels like it. Exactly. You know? Everyone has a phone or two phones. So
yeah.
There's a huge power there. That's a whole market. That's a whole industry of you can create businesses of, if it's e-commerce, you know, different online platforms, mobile mm-hmm. banking. Mm-hmm. Think of mobile services that you can cater or develop to handle Africans, the amount of Africans that use mobile phones.
And I think the biggest opportunity there too is if we don't have the infrastructure to support facilitate populations being able to easily access goods and services, right?
Yep.
How do you then mitigate that? And you bring up a wonderful point about mobile accessibility. Things like M-Pesa, mobile money for MTN,
yep.
Things like that mm-hmm. have almost damn near negated the need for like banks, you know?
Yes.
Or you have someone in the village, they don't have to travel however many kilometers to access money, you know,
go to a corner shop and get that money.
Exactly. You know, so the money comes straight to their phone, and if they need to pay by cash or something like that, then now they have kiosks set up around town. But you think of like an older population, they don't have accessibility like that, and you know, internet might not be as strong in places like that. Of course, 100% accessibility is a very, 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 very big and fast growing market.
No, for sure. And, you know, to kind of what I had quoted from the articles we're reading, where it said that, you know, because, you know, Africa, we used to still be import heavy, right? And what we're talking about fastest growing is, you know, that importations, things that Africa imports, you know, which is largely after it's processed and brought back. Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I remember one time my dad having, you know, going on a whole, you know, soliloquy of why don't we have a fruit juice processing plant in Africa? We produce all these fruits and export it, but we don't have a processing plant. We get all these fruits, we're sending away, and we come back and drink Don Simon, you know? So I know it was kind of funny when he was on that kind of like soapbox, but you think about it, he's right. That industrialization, you know, and you know, what when we did kind of the looking into it, it said here, for example, I'm going to quote from the article, and anyone's interested, we'll put these links. It says, as Africa substitutes its imports and meets its growing local demand, it is estimated that African industries have the opportunity to double production to nearly 1 trillion within a decade. Imagine, and that ties into that population growth that you're saying too. Yeah. This is huge opportunity. So
very big
potential's there.
Yeah. I can't say enough about that, but the need for, I guess, people to even see the vision. I don't know. Sometimes leadership plays a huge factor. And sometimes it's just straight up exposure, you know, because if they knew that M-Pesa is used as a case study or a model for fintech in places like America, you know, now you would be seeing the sorts of opportunities that we have as a whole continent. Can't say enough about how much we need to not only invest there, but educate our people here and there about the sort of opportunities that are around.
For sure.
Not saying it's a bed of roses. It's definitely probably more challenging than it is pleasing, but it's needed because of the fruits that our kids would benefit.
Of course, you know, of course.
And just what did Ghana say about their cocoa?
So, I mean, Ghana, you know, they've been using them as an example. They've been, you know, producing and exporting cocoa. It's kind of one of their main known exports where they kind of get their profits from.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think there's a rise in oil production that they do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Ghana is providing another initiative of creating avenues for the diaspora. Specifically, they're targeting African Americans returning to Ghana and contributing to the economy.
Okay. So sort of like a welcome back, right?
Yes. Okay. And that, I think that the Ghana, using Ghana as a case study, that kind of ties into, I think, what we wanted to talk about. Next is, well, we know these industries are growing. Africa still countries are, you know, whatever they are blessed with natural resources, they export those.
Mm-hmm.
They don't largely process it, but it's exported, whether it's oil, which we all know oil from, you know, Nigeria, and, you know, now Ghana too is, you know, becoming a big player in oil, with cocoa, you know.
Cobalt as well in Congo.
Congo, they are just the holy grail of natural resources, you know.
Yeah, a lot of minerals.
You know, so that has been the standard. But you know, it's been interesting, and I think it's what caught our attention too, of, you know, we all heard about a few years ago the whole year the return with Ghana, and kind of this it's always been there, but you can notice there's been the president
Akufo-Addo.
He's been really pushing on, you know, kind of, you know, and the whole government of, you know, luring, you know, African Americans largely to come back, you know, and, you know, contribute to the economy and settle in Ghana, mm-hmm. and providing avenues for them. So that's something that I feel like it's we should talk about, in if this is a is basically offering African Americans or people of the African diaspora or of African origin,
yeah,
and you know, kind of creating the opportunity, or kind of, what can I say? Like, I don't want to say they're in some way wooing or trying to lure them in, but yeah. you know, they're just, it's basically like opening the doors to say,
yeah.
come back, return, and contribute to our economy.
Uh-huh.
That is a better alternative than staying in the US.
Okay.
So Ghana's been heavy on that.
Yeah, they have. I mean, everything. They've been doing from, like you were talking about, things like investing in things like agriculture, right? They've been in the entertainment sector with yes. music, right?
Yeah.
Afrochella
yeah.
is in Ghana. They've been doing the Year of the Return. Even Cardi B was there yep, like 2 years ago, right?
Yep, yep.
They've been in the tech industry. There's this really dope coder. What's his name? Idris Sandu. He hangs out, or he's rubbing shoulders with like Jay-Z, Kanye, wow. all them, right? He's taking his own personal fund, and he's going to build a technology center in a place in Ghana. I forget what the place is, right? So they're tapping into not just like singular sectors. They're spreading, right, that influence, and they called it the right to abode, right?
Yeah, so...
So they're taking full advantage of that. They are. Like, there's opportunities in everything, right? So...
I mean, how feasible it is this is though, because you know.
So first thing, I think it's feasible, and the first thing that comes to mind though is people have to want to make that move, right? And they have to be enticed to the point where they're like, "This is a better life for me," right?
A better alternative.
A better alternative, yeah, or a better quality of life, right? What sort of way is the government effectively saying this is the only option, and how do you compete with the opportunities that America has to offer?
I mean, they you can, because you know, I think Ghana, of course, even from the president, they realize African Americans are the richest Black people in the world.
Okay,
and he's saying that, or, you know, that country is saying that, hey, come back, you know, and return back to your roots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of feeling of, you know, that not knowing your heritage, not knowing kind of, you know, you've been through the whole slavery, and we can go again through the colonialism and that whole system, right?
Mm-hmm. Of
separating a large group of Black people in, you know, Afro-Americans, Afro-Caribbeans away from kind of their heritage. And Ghana, you know, their whole independence, their whole colonialism, it's kind of built, driven around that Pan-Africanism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's tapping into that and providing the picture of, look, we have created structures, and we have created not the economy. We have created the transparency to allow you to come back to the home, in essence, to your motherland, and contribute to society and gain more fulfillment than if you stayed in the US.
I do have like a lot of questions about it. I think it's feasible, right? So, I think it's very feasible.
But, and if you read the facts that we saw here,
yeah.
what does it say? It says Ghana is, I don't know if still, but it was the only country to provide people of African ancestry the legal right to stay in the country indefinitely through this right to abode law. Right to abode,
yeah. That's correct.
And what does the right to abode law say? It's basically, if you are of, you know, African ancestry or African origin, kind of your, you know, your heritage. Well, I don't know if your heritage, but I'm sure if you, let's say, the DNA test and it says you're of African ancestry.
Yeah.
It's basically built around, hey, African Americans or African, anyone from the diaspora.
Yeah.
You know, you are allowed to return back to Ghana,
mm-hmm.
and you know, eventually, or even at then, you'll be able to get your citizenship.
I think The only question I have around that would be the cultural implications of that, right? Is because naturally, if you move to a more like cosmopolitan, inclusive sort of society, right, you have to sacrifice a bit of your culture, right? Because it's not like you're saying like, oh yeah, if you're of African heritage, come to Ghana, but now you have to start wearing kente, you have to speak chi.
Well, you have to want it too, you know?
But that's the thing is, how far are they willing to let go of
to
that?
To assimilate?
Yeah, or not the people coming in, but
the people
receiving.
Who are already there.
Yeah.
Well, I wish we had a Ghanaian here to tell us their perspective on how they feel about...
How would you feel about if that was Gambia?
If Gambia, a large group of, you know, a lot of African Americans are coming in and, you know, living there. I think it's a good thing if, like I said, it is a direct contribution to the economy. Mm-hmm. They're building businesses, hiring Gambians, you know, and if it's in that aspect, right, they are, you know, because I would, you know, it's one of those where I would rather have, I'll be okay, right, rather have if in Gambia there are, you know, lots of African Americans, let's say, return and they're opening businesses, you know, shops, you know, and hiring Gambians, you know, open schools and, you know, making sure that it's catered towards, you know, contributing directly to the country too. Because if you say you're a Ghanaian citizen or you're a Gambian, you know, citizen because you are of your ancestry and you come back, that means you have to serve your nation in an aspect of, in a way, right?
Okay.
And that in, those are the measures I want to see. Are you contributing to the economy?
So ultimately,
and benefiting the people.
Yeah, ultimately, you want that dollar to remain in Gambia.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Let the, you know, money stay there and its benefit. Because what happens with our foreign businesses, you know, we can go about being taken over in Africa. Industries being taken over. Do you really think that that money stays in the country?
No, absolutely
not.
That's happening with
it does not.
A lot
they
of different
barely
people
hire,
coming in.
You know, they don't treat you as well, you know, because they're not from there. Yeah. You know, so it's not the same.
Besides the operational costs, all the profits, revenues,
gone.
Everything goes back directly
it's
to
out.
Their foreign countries.
Yes, and their, you know, families and their people are the ones, are the benefactors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the locals never benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So if having African Americans or anyone from the diaspora return and that's what they can contribute to, what am I to say, you know, your culture, you know, people start, you know, wearing chains and stuff. They already do that anyway. So,
like Kumerica?
I don't think there should be cultural concerns.
Okay.
I don't think so. I don't think, like I said, we can't speak for Ghana because I don't know how it is in. But I think largely it's probably going well for those because a large number of, you know, African Americans are moving to Ghana.
And I don't think it's just Ghana too. I know that
even Gambia too. Some are, you know,
a lot of people are relocating back home.
Mm-hmm.
It started before the whole year of return movement, and I think for sure Gambia they go back. I saw Cape Verde,
like a lot of West African countries. If you create frameworks that allow an ease in terms of entry and stay, you can be very successful. It first starts with tourism, though, so because they'll first come, you know, visit tourists, and then, you know, envision whether or not it's a better life if they live there. You have lower cost of living, most likely, in Africa than in these countries, especially West Africa and versus in the U.S., and which alternative? Mm-hmm. Is your quality of life going to improve by living, you know, the U.S. or not?
So that begs the question too, how much do these people or how much do these countries invest in tourism, you know?
Well, what did we find? What was this fact again?
They said that, according to the Ministry of Tourism, the initiative generated about $1.9 billion in revenue from tourism.
So
now it's just in Ghana.
In Ghana.
Yeah.
They're whole year of the return model and, you know, advertising to African Americans to come back and, you know, celebrate the culture and kind of feel that reconnection back.
That's
to your
$1.9 billion.
$1.9 billion.
Yeah. Which is it's
what does that translate to? Local businesses. Hopefully. Hotels, you know, services.
Yeah.
All I hear is economic growth.
Exactly. I think it's great. I think also that the Ghanaian leaders probably realized that, right? And invest in that, you know?
Yes, because they knew the potential.
Not only is that painting a positive light of the country, you're also bringing in positive dollars. You know what I'm saying? You're getting mm-hmm. direct benefits from
that. Yep, from the riches, you know.
Have to hold them accountable on how they, you know, spend this money.
Yeah, how they spend it. And like you said, mentioned too, no matter what though, you know, it's the whole Killmonger returning to Wakanda vibe thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that plays into it. Is if you return back to Africa as an African American, you know, you truly have to, you know, see yourself as, you know, not as an equal to any, let's say, Ghanaian citizen.
As an equal?
Yes, mm-hmm. you have to. You can in any one mind, because, you know, people have, I feel like privilege and a sense of superiority has a strange way, even among, you know, Black people, mm-hmm. of translating.
Okay, I hear that.
You
can't
go back and still think you are better than, you know, than regular or people, or, you know, the locals.
But I don't even like that word, locals. I think that's just like a human nature thing.
I know, but I'm just saying that's... Because it's like when we had the Two Shy Guys and, you know, we talked about the whole dynamic between, you know, African Americans and Africans, it's usually, you know, especially here for us living in America, there's been always, you know, we had talking about from through high school experiences of, it's always not been the best relationship, to say the least.
I mean, there is that truth to it, but it's also...
Can't Killmonger return and be in peace with, you know, the Wakandans?
Of course. I was hurt when he just took the knife out, because I was like,
no, but I mean, Killmonger had an anger to a certain degree that it was very relatable to a lot.
Well, yeah, but they killed his dad.
No, the king
killed his dad.
Yeah, but still, it's the acceptance. Because I'm sure if, you know, people for the diaspora or African-Americans return back, I'm sure they would want to feel accepted, mm-hmm. By whichever country they go to. And I don't think we can truly answer if they're going to be accepted.
I don't think Africans, at least in Uganda, I don't know about other places, but I don't think they're not like, they're very hospitable people, you know, so they're not.
If you have money. Nah, just joking.
You can't be a jokester coming through, you know? Like, you
have no. But, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like I said, I'll definitely want to hear more about, you know, experiences of, you know, I know on YouTube there are a couple of YouTubers who just document that, talk about moving back to Africa and their journey. And, you know, largely most of them advocate for, especially African Americans, to, hey, if you are in the U.S. and you're largely struggling, you know, living that, you know, paycheck after paycheck life.
Yeah.
This is a better quality of life you can achieve by returning to, well, yeah, it is a return. Returning back to Africa.
It's most definitely. I think that, just like you said, economically, it makes better sense, mm-hmm. Because you can save up a little bit of money and go live, you know, with a better quality of life. But also, like, from an intrinsic value standpoint, it has very, very large benefits. You
know? I agree.
But that kind of brings us to the end of this episode. It's a lot of food for talk. But not only that, bro, there's so many things to talk about. We're just scraping the iceberg.
It's just to, you know,
to ruffle the feathers, as they say.
Yeah, let us know. You guys, there's a lot of potential here, you know?
These conversations can go on for days. And, man, there's a lot to be said, anyways.
Yeah.
Because we just touched on a few different things.
Oh, yeah.
But who's our pioneer of the day today?
You know, our pioneer day is only fitting with, if we use Ghana, this episode as a case study, the Black Star.
Black Stars.
For Ghana. You know,
Ghana Black Stars.
Do you know where the, you know, Black Star term comes from, you know?
I don't. Where does it come from?
You know, Ghana being, it's 1957, gaining independence, one of the first African countries to gain independence. Mm-hmm. And almost the uprising of Pan-Africanism, the likes of Nkrumah and Malcolm and Maya Angelou, all going there around that time. Interesting fact, it traces back the Black Star to who was the first, who, this is a little quiz, who was the first advocator of Pan-Africanism?
That'd have to be Marcus Garvey.
That's right. Yeah. Marcus Garvey in the 20s.
In the diaspora.
Diaspora.
Right? Yeah.
Started a whole movement.
Called the Back to Africa movement?
Yes, now? Back to Africa, and advocating for, you know, Black people in the diaspora and uprooted from Africa through slavery to return back to the continent, return back home.
Mm-hmm.
And he started a movement of Pan-Africanism, and he had a shipping company called the Black Line. I think it was the
Black Star Line.
The Black Star Line.
Mm-hmm.
To help Blacks, to help Black people return back to Africa.
Imagine that.
So imagine that this guy did this in, like, you know, over 100 years ago. He had this vision.
Yeah.
And, get, you know, 30, 40 years later, when Ghana gained independence, you know, and they became known as the Black Stars. So, you know, it stems from the Garvey Black Star Line movement of, you know, providing shipping opportunities for Black people back to the continent. So
it's mad, bro.
You know, it's a very interesting piece of history. And for that reason, Marcus Garvey is a pioneer of the day.
And this is a guy who is well traveled too, right?
Yes.
He, born in Jamaica.
Yep.
Traveled throughout the US, Europe, London, kind of lived around there. Africa, and he definitely saw that as the place where we needed to settle.
And it's only right we continue to have this mindset, because people don't, you know, as what's interesting of us talking about it, it's the same thing more or less that he was saying, right? Look at what's going in Africa, investments, you know, that's where we're from, and this is where our future should be. So Garvey preached that, and, you know, all these great civil rights leaders or African leaders that we had, you know, they all, you know, took a little bit of that Garvey movement. And
so when you see Dr. Umar spitting game.
Oh, Umar's.
Tap in.
Blueprint. Ask Dr. Umar where he gets that.
Tap in.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, Marcus Garvey.
All right. That sounds good. Thank you for that. Episode, shout out to the late, great Marcus Garvey. What did he call his, what did they, his, their followers call themselves? Garveyites, right? Is it Garveyites?
I don't know. Maybe we'll see what Dr. Umar probably knows. We'll send him an email.
He's got the FDMG Academy coming up.
Donations. Have you made your donations?
No comment.
I'm gonna have to email Umar and be like, this brother right here, you know, put blonde hair on his head, but don't make donations.
I hope he don't see this, man. Dr. Umar, I apologize.
Hey, shout out to Umar, man.
Real shit. Shout out to him, man.
Yeah, he understands the problem, though, and he does the need very well. His solutions might not be the best, but he understands the problem identification part. He does a good job of identifying.
His delivery might be off, but he definitely
understands. He knows the problem.
He definitely understands.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's been it for episode 9. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. Yeah,
thank you guys for the continued support.
Of course, and, you know, we're going to try to keep staying consistent with it. But it's been episode 9.
Do the like, comment, and
subscribe.
You know, support us in any way that you can. Yeah. You know, because we appreciate the support and the messages.
100%.
We don't take it for granted.
No, sir. But yeah, thank you guys. And we'll catch you guys on next episode 10.
All right. Last one. Let's go.
Cheers.